The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Good morning. It's Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. I'm Sean Sayre here with you this morning. It is Friday, January 16th, and just about 7:30 in the morning. Thanks for joining us here on the show. You're listening to us on 89.7 WTBR-FM, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lenox, and Stockbridge, and of course watching it on the PCTV Select app. And on our web stream on channel 1301, Access Pittsfield. Lots of ways to watch and listen to the show. We appreciate you being here this morning. Lee Davis is my guest this morning. She's a state representative for the 3rd Berkshire District in the General Court of the Massachusetts Legislature. We'll get it all formal there. She'll be my guest for the whole hour this morning. We'll be talking about issues for the 3rd Berkshire District and all of Berkshire County in a lot of ways. The 3rd Berkshire District really spans quite a large parcel of the county. We'll talk about that. And it also includes Dalton, by the way, which is right next door here to Pittsfield. Lots of listeners and viewers of our show in Dalton. So lots to talk about. First, let's get to the weather forecast and see what we have in store for us today. This is from the National Weather Service. Here we go.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly sunny and blustery, colder with highs in the mid-20s. West wind 15 to 25 miles per hour. Gusts up to 45 miles per hour, decreasing to 35 miles per hour this afternoon. Wind chill values as low as 12 below this morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Snow showers likely after midnight. Snow accumulation around an inch. Cold with lows around 17. Temperature rising into the mid-20s after midnight. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow 60%. Saturday, snow showers likely. Additional snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches possible. Night is cool with highs in the mid-30s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Chance of snow 70%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, and if you needed a reminder that it's still winter, step out of your door today. The last couple days have been in the 30s, and you saw things melting and all kinds of good stuff. And you wake up today, and it's different out there for sure. You heard the wind whipping last night. It was cold. It got out of my house. It was about 13 degrees. I'm showing 11 right now. I don't know which one's right. But
I think you just turned the air conditioning on, did you?
Well, we have to turn the air conditioning on in the studio. Unfortunately, that's one of those things. Outside, I don't have much control of. Lee Davis, thanks for joining us here today.
It's always a pleasure.
Good morning.
Love
thanks
to see you,
thanks
Sean.
For making the trip up.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was a nice drive.
Yeah, good.
Wide awake.
As am I somehow here in the morning.
Not we being have our matching person. Three-quarter zips.
I know, I guess. That's very nice. welcome back to the show. I think last time you were on the show, you were a newly minted legislator, I think we could say. I think maybe you had only been there for about a month or 2 months at the time, very early on in the whole process. So now you've completed a whole year of service there in the legislature, driving back and forth frequently to the state house. Give us your first year's impressions. Tell us what it's like.
Yeah, I absolutely love it. First of all, it's great to see you, Sean, and yeah. I'm a big big fan and proponent of community television, community radio. That's
thank
how
you
I
for
started
that.
Out as a film major way back when. Yeah. But yeah, first year reflections, you know. I love it. It's a great fit for me. Politics is relationships, and it's something that I'm really drawn to. It's a lot of listening. You know, you want to be a leader, but you want to listen as much as you lead. You know, representing the 3rd Berkshire District, there's a lot of driving, so I'm doing 2,000 miles a month. And you know,
how's the car holding up for
it's,
that?
It's okay. I have a nice 2020 car. You know, I gave my Subaru to my son, and then got another used car. So that's really important. Yeah. But I had the largest district in terms of the physical distance
in the entire state.
Entire state, and from end to end, you know, Dalton to Mount Washington. So I do a lot of driving. But great colleagues, you know, we're all a team. So it's like you work on a bill and then we all work it on it together. And so it's all about teamwork. Mm-hmm. It's about focus, about constituent services. You know, we have so many needs going on, you know, in the district as well as the region, as well as the nation, obviously. So,
and you mentioned relationships, and it really goes both ways with this particular job, right? Because you have to have relationships with your constituents, with folks here on the ground in the district, in the many communities. How many communities do you represent?
I represent 18.
18 different communities. Yeah, and again, these are large landmass communities, right? These are not necessarily small little carve outs like you might see on the eastern end of the state.
Yeah. I mean, some of my colleagues, you know, walk around the block and that's their district.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say it takes me almost an hour and a half end to end. So that I think they recognize that particularly in the Berkshires, we have probably the hardest job.
Yeah.
And
those are the other relationships, right? Are the relationships with the other legislators in the chamber and sort of getting along and figuring out the path of how things get done.
Yeah. I call myself an accidental politician. you know, I fell into it just through community service and seeing when that was a transplant, much like you.
Yeah.
Although you came from North Adams, I came from Ireland. So I think I came a little farther away. So you see the ones that, you know, have lived experience that are kind of in it for, you know, that. And then you have people that are politicians that kind of, you know, went to school, have law degrees, you know, have kind of this is a stepping stone to something else. So I see that split. And not to say one is better than the other, but there's definitely a split.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love it. So lots of hard work. I mean, I probably do an 80 hours a week, but I've always been a workhorse. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I'm not working, I'm probably developing myself. So it's you know, probably have to, you know, slow down a bit.
It is one of those things where you got to love it, right?
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah. It's definitely a call to serve. Yeah.
As far as I was curious about the legal component of the legislature, because you do hear that there are a lot of lawyers that become legislators. I don't think we necessarily have that here in the Berkshire County delegation, which is interesting. But I think
we have a lot of teachers. So, I taught for 10 years.
Yeah.
I was tenured and taught in Ireland, and the rest of the delegation all have some teaching experience.
Right. That's true.
So that's great. I mean, we just met with BCC just a few days ago, and I could really relate to, especially the single parents and the people that were working and attending school at the same time. And so I think having that element in the delegation that really comes from learned experience and, you know, a union, I was part of a union as well as Senator Palmark. Mm. And so I think that union teachers, you know, so we're small but mighty.
Yeah. And as far as the perspective of the way that the eastern end of the state views Berkshire County. First of all, I think we all kind of think that they forget about us, that they draw the line at the Connecticut River sometime or the Pioneer Valley, and that's Western Massachusetts to them. Yeah. And they don't necessarily realize that there's this other whole swath out here that has needs, and maybe the needs are different than the ones that they're focusing on, that they're thinking about for their own districts. And it's more like that than it is like us. Right?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. So there's definitely a distinct you know, border between kind of rural thoughts and reflections and way you approach things and urban. And, you know, what I'm trying to do is spend as much time as I can in Boston to really get to know my Boston colleagues, because, you know, they are a bigger delegation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think building those relationships and making sure you have relationships with the chairs of certain committees is super important. So, you know, I'm doing all my own constituent work in the district because my aide is in Boston who doesn't have a car. So I'm doing, that's why I'm doing so much driving. So I'm very, very hands-on. And she, I think we logged last year, she had over 3,000 points of contact last year, just constituent services, you know, calls, messages. I often give my cell phone out. So we are working super hard. But yeah, there's definitely You know, distinct difference between urban and rural.
Do the constituents, do they have any lines that they won't cross? Like, in other words, if you're giving your cell phone out and you're sort of open and available all the time, are you able to put up some borders there and say, well, you know, I do have some of my own personal time. I'm just not on the clock all the time.
Yeah, I might be a bit unique because I don't step away from that, you know, kind of interaction. So
that
a lot
can
of
wear
times,
on you, right?
Yeah, no, it doesn't, and I think it would wear. I mean, a lot of times Serena, who's my wonderful, wonderful aide, you know, she'll be a bit flabbergasted and she'll be like, "I just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. This person's called so many times," and I enjoy that. I'll say, you know, I'll just give me their cell phone and I'll call them and end up on a conversation for 20 minutes And it's those touch points that really, really make a difference. Yeah. And, you know, we get so many heart-wrenching stories from, you know, unemployment to housing to deaths to it's just, you know, so a lot of frustration, obviously, on a local level, regional level, federal level. So
is it frustrating to know that the calls like that come in and that there are just some things that you just can't handle, can't take care of for them, you know?
What I love about this job is that you have access to people that you wouldn't normally have access to. So I, you know, have access now to the governor, right? I have her cell, and I'm not saying I'm any better than anyone else, but, or, you know, Senator Markey or Senator Warren. So you, and to all the agencies. So we have a lot of unemployment assistant work, and you know, I have a direct line to that, and they're having so many problems at the right now. The Attorney General's office. We were just on a 40-minute call yesterday about, you know, tiny homes and, you know, some of the legalities of towns making that decisions between bylaws. And so I love that part, is that you have a direct line and they listen to you. You know, you can call someone in the AGO's office, the Attorney General's office, or the governor's office, or you know, the housing secretary's office, and actually make a difference. So I think having that ability to have the door open for you is huge.
Yeah. Another last year reflection. What did you learn in the last year that maybe you didn't understand or didn't know going in that now it's like, oh, now I understand how that works?
Well, I don't have a law background, so I didn't realize, you know, writing legislation. I was like, I've never written. No one tells you how to do that.
Right.
So we're very. So I wrote 33 bills. So I guess more than anyone had.
Which seems ambitious, right?
Which I didn't even know.
First year legislator.
Yeah, I know. And it was just that I had heard about so many needs in the community, and I really wanted to do as much as I could. And but having the benefit of have house counsel, which is kind of, you know, in house counsel that you can run things by. And so you can come up with an idea and do the framework and then have someone actually, you know, make sure, do all the checks and balances for you. So that part I didn't know, and that there is a process and that you have support. And you have a lot of, you know, advocates and agencies that you can call and say, hey, am I on the right track? So that's huge, the, you know, the legal aspect of it. So you have the legal aspect and then you have the relationships. And I'm such a... you know, being a former film editor that kind of can sit on a bench or sim at a cam or a computer for 16 hours a day and just focus on one frame. I love that kind of deep dive, but then I love kind of coming out and thinking about people's stories and how I can help them. So for me, it's a perfect fit because I don't shy away from doing the deep dive on legislation.
And that whole process seems more like a marathon than a sprint anyway, right? And any bill that I've followed, you know, something that we're concerned about here or in Pittsfield or whatever, and I've seen the process come and go over the years, and it does seem like, you know, it takes a few attempts, it takes a few tries for really good legislation. Sometimes things that are just so obvious that everybody says, well, yeah, why isn't that a law? Why isn't that already in place? And yet, in one term, it still doesn't go through, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that is another learning opportunity, I should say, is that legislation takes a long time. Yeah. You know, laws take a long time, and they should. I mean, there's a lot of checks and balances. There's a lot of people you need to make sure that are, you know, on the right track or that we're on the right track with them. And so I have to learn to be patient, I think, and realize that, you know, maybe something I've taken – you know, hold of has been worked on for years and years and years before me. And, you know, I have to, how can I get a nice fresh perspective or a different angle, or just have the passion and be like, okay, well, I'll take the baton and finish it and carry it across the finish line. So I really see it almost as a, you know, one of those instances that people are carrying the baton and giving it to each other, and we're all in it together. So it
must be interesting too, because obviously there, you have to build consensus for legislation. So first of all, you have to have, you know, a good number of people who want something like that to go through. Yeah. And there are some things that seem more obvious than others. And then you have to bring it in to the legislature and convince all the other folks there to say, no, this is a good idea. Maybe you hadn't thought of this, but here we are out in rural Berkshire County. This is a need of ours. You know, we need you to consider this in the grand scheme.
Yeah. I mean, so.
So two different kinds of consensus.
Absolutely. I mean, a good example are the emergency medical services bills that I filed this session. I filed five of them. And that came out of just seeing the need that we have here, and particularly Western Mass and all of rural, rural Massachusetts.
An attempt to make it an essential service,
I mean, that from making an essential service, which would get a, you know, a streamlined path and dedicated funding,
consistent.
You know, raise it to the point that people see that it's something that's struggling that we all need. And, you know, coming up at the issue from different ways. So, you know, not only an essential service, but how do we deal with the laws that, you know, make it harder for EMTs to work between state lines, you know, to come between Connecticut and New York.
Right. And see, so that's probably not an issue at all in the Boston area and the suburbs.
And,
that,
and
right?
that's exactly, and that's
there's
where
no
the relationship.
There's no problem getting an ambulance there.
Exactly.
There just isn't.
So I was very fortunate to be working very closely with Action Ambulance and, so, and, you know, County Ambulance and, and obviously Southern Berkshire Ambulance. But so when I, when we had our bill, when I had my bill heard at the committee, I mean, the place was packed. The committee here was packed, and we had a lot of Boston EMS there. And that felt great.
Well,
and that, and a lot of work was going on behind the scenes, and the Boston Globe covered that, that particular bill. So I was quite surprised to hear that it went to study. So unfortunately, four of my EMS bills went to study. One is still surviving.
That's language for it's kind of dead,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so basically language,
It sounds like it's promising. It's going to study. They're going to study it further.
Exactly, and that's a, that's another learning opportunity. So I'm going to still keep pushing the CPR bill, which really would bring CPR into high schools to make it part of the requirements to teach CPR, which would be a public health, obviously, benefit to everyone, and have it be taught by EMT professionals. So I'm looking at how can we raise the profile of this, you know, really, really much needed, you know, employment, you know,
well, I mean,
opportunity.
That kind of goes along with sort of life skills teaching and things like that, that has been a real push for high schools. And I think of civics, and I think of, you know, being able to balance a checkbook and managing money and things. CPR is one of those things where, you know, we're kind of missing the boat on that somehow.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people, many, many people who have never taken a course or never trained in it. And in that situation would freeze up and wait for someone trained to come over. If we had more people ready to do it, that would be huge.
Yeah. And that's a, you know, I had the Red Cross testifying with me and American Heart Association. So it was wonderful because not only I had the EMS, but then I was making relationships, you know, with other agencies. So, you know, it's all about coming together, and it, I'm not going to stop. I'll keep pushing. So we'll see.
That's
we'll see.
Only thing you could do. You got to keep going, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Lee Davis is my guest here this morning. If you're just joining us on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. She is the state representative for the 3rd Berkshire District, covering most, if not all, of Southern Berkshire County and Dalton, as a matter of fact. So it, that is a, if you look at the map, it's this huge swath of land, and then it kind of juts up a little bit into the Dalton.
I love Dalton.
Yeah, and I think that was also a good fit when they did the redistricting, which was a necessary thing. You know, the population shifts, and we unfortunately lost a state representative who was representing Berkshire County. We had four, we have three now, but it seems like a good match for where those three representatives sort of represent Northern Berkshire with John Barrett. Certainly, he's pretty familiar with that area, and those folks are familiar with him. Tricia, right here in all of Pittsfield, and then you've got everything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
So let's go to one of the bills that has been kind of a headline generator over the last year, too, which is, again, I would say consensus-wise and common sense-wise, how could you not support this bill, which was the sexual assaults by persons in authority, right? Everybody kind of knows that as the story of what happened at Miss Hall's school. And it just seems so obvious that if you're a 16-year-old student under the, you know, authority and care of a teacher or a priest or whoever it is going to be in that situation, you know, even though the age of consent is 16, there's something wrong there. It's like if you're having sex with two 16-year-olds, that's one thing. If one of them is your teacher and he's 35 and you're 16, everybody kind of sees that's a very different thing, right?
Yeah, so that's a tough one, and just, you know, driving from my house, you know, past Miss Hall's school was you know, it always gives me a bit chill. So, yeah, so that was one of the major pieces of legislation that I filed. It originally was H-1634, and now it's been rolled into H-4538, which is more of an encompassing bill. So it's kind of a youth protection omnibus bill or student protection omnibus bill. And what's nice with this is that, first of all, it's advanced.
Okay.
And it's in the House Ways and Means, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. So it was heard in from the Judiciary Committee, and I testified alongside DA Tim Shagrew and Melissa Fares and Hillary Simon, who were former students of Matt Rutledge, former students at Miss Hall's. And again, the room was packed. And
to refresh people's memories, when that issue came up, the DA, Tim Shagrew, basically said, I can't prosecute this because the law won't permit it.
Yeah. Right? And that goes back to relationships. So as soon as I was hired, as soon as I was elected, one of the very first conversations I had was meeting with Tim and saying, you know, how can I help you? And so we had a long discussion about that. And that's when I made that decision to file this bill. So right now it's you know, alongside 700 other bills sitting on the desk of House Ways and Means, it has momentum. And it's really looking at prevention and preventing and putting safeguards in place in addition to closing this loophole that allows teachers and people in positions of authority in schools just, you know, to have sexual conduct with 16, 17-year-olds. So I'm feeling really, really positive and hopeful and optimistic, and actually just had a really long Zoom call with Melissa and Hillary yesterday. New York Times has featured it. Vanity Fair has featured it twice. Yeah.
There's a long documentary. And I think devastating article in Vanity Fair.
I read that entire thing. Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of conversations happening behind the scenes. And this is where I love this. You know, you kind of dip your toe in and out, and you really meet with them, and you try to convince that this is, you know, something of the moment, that we can't wait another 10 years to have this. And, you know, it's going to be more survivors that need to have justice.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something. What would potentially be any kind of resistance to this bill? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
I know how you just mentioned 700 bills and it can get lost in the shuffle. But how can people not take this and say, this is just such common sense, it has to go through?
Yeah. I think that's where the politics comes in, right? So you need to flag it and say, you know, my bill is more important than these 699 bills. And I asked that question to the chair of the Judiciary Committee last year in the Senate side. And I said, how could this not pass? Why was this sent to study? And he basically said, it's a great bill, but we had too many. So I think, you know, that push and making sure that it's you know, it's in the press, that the people behind the scenes are really guiding it. So I've met with the Ways and Means Committee. I've had these conversations. I've met with, you know, advocates, and it's guiding it, but being sensitive that you're not pushing too much, that it feels reactionary if they were to go ahead. So it's a real balancing act. So I think it's you know, guiding it through and having those key conversations once it advances. So now getting to the floor, that's the last thing. So I have no doubt if it gets to the floor, it'll pass. The governor's already said it will be signed. So this is where the delicate relationship building really, really matters. So that's what I'm working really hard on.
Yeah. Is that one of the bills that would get to the floor on its own merit, or would it get rolled into some other larger bill? Because that seems to happen a lot.
Well, too. So what's happened right now is my bill that was a companion bill to a Senate bill, which also is advancing on the Senate side, mm-hmm. as it was. This bill, H-4538, is now a bill that's rolled in, five bills are rolled in.
Okay.
So it encompasses a little bit about, you know, prevention, policy, safeguards, mm-hmm. in addition to closing this legal loophole okay. that will criminalize the sexual conduct. So it actually already is mm-hmm. right now. So mm-hmm. when it goes to the floor, hopefully, mm-hmm. When it goes to the House floor, it'll be already this omnibus bill, which touches upon really key aspects.
And these other bills were all bills that were filed by other legislators
exactly.
that are somehow related in a way and that complement each other. So
exactly.
That, so that's
now
an
it's
interesting
focusing.
Process.
It
right?
is, exactly. Yeah. It's focusing it now on educational institutions. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit narrowed, but I think we have a better chance having it narrowed at this point.
Yeah. You know, just the overall age of consent and how it isn't consistent across all the different 50 states. I don't know exactly how many have 16. That seems to be the lowest, right? There aren't any states that have anything lower than 16.
Yeah.
That
so,
I
mean, the
but
key,
some are 17, some
yeah,
are 18.
So the key aspect to know is that this does not change the right. age of consent,
right.
which is 16 in Massachusetts.
Yeah. Should that be changed, though?
I think that's too messy. I mean, if you can go
is
there.
Is it too hard to do
yeah.
that?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many, you know, there's the age to vote. There's the age to have guns.
Uh-huh.
So that would be, I would say that would not have a chance mm. of passing. So this is, you know, addressing a very, very slim loophole when you have students that under the authority of teachers or anyone in a school setting. Mm. So, you know, the fact that adolescents don't have the brain development at that age to make decisions
yeah.
that, you know, really relate to consent. So we're mm-hmm. saying that when
clearly some of the adults don't either, by the way.
But. Exactly. So it's really focusing on this authority and, you know, power is not permission. So mm-hmm. just because you are an authority figure mm-hmm. and the student is, you know, of the age of consent doesn't allow you to have sexual conduct
yeah.
with them. So we were saying, you know, between the, you know, age of consent and 18, that is a very, very slim margin
right.
that we are focusing on. So
and the power. Or, you know, is implicit, right? I mean, it's
yeah.
it's not like the 16-year-old has the experience in a lot of ways to parse that all out, to understand where that's coming from and to know that the adult, the one in power, might be really skilled at this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what we saw at Ms. Hall's, right? That there was a sort of a professional groomer at work there.
Yeah, I mean, for more than 20 years,
yeah.
You know, students
with
were
a long
groomed,
history, yes.
You know, and I won't go into
no.
it. That's a whole nother.
No
but, but what I would say is that
but using
you
that
know,
as an example,
when
of
you
to
groom
say what,
a student and you wait till they're 16 and then you bring it to a sexual level,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's not consent. That's
mm-hmm.
exploitation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what we're targeting is those people that take advantage of that situation.
Yeah, for sure. So good luck with
Thank
that
you.
Bill.
Yeah.
What,
so
what is the sort of the target date for that? Because we're in the second half of this session, right? The session lasts 2 years.
Yes, yes.
So
this is key. I mean,
yeah.
anywhere between now and July.
Mm.
So it's H-4538. So if you want to, you know, contact me, leedavis.org, and say, you know, I want to write a letter or look at, you know, the state website. But
yeah. What kinds of things that constituents do that can move the needle on that? Is it calls to you? Is it calls to a committee chair? You know, what kinds of activism can people do if they hear this and they say,
yeah.
I'd like to make a difference. How can I do that?
So it's interesting. On the call we had or I had yesterday with Melissa and Hillary, the two former students, we have an advocacy group called World Without Exploitation that's now joined in. And they asked that same question. And so we're trying to do a sign-on letter. I'm going to be talking to the American Federation of Teachers, the, you know, teachers unions, to see if they'll sign on, the, you know, MTA, the teachers, you know, Massachusetts Teachers Association. So get the big advocacy group. So we have hundreds and hundreds of letters, which I'm so grateful for, going to Chair Michalowicz, who's the chair of the Ways and Means. So that's helpful. But knowing that I get those letters too from different bills, it becomes overwhelming. And at some point, you just kind of start tuning out. So we're trying to really, really focus the strategy by having the big players saying, we're behind this bill, you know, full stop.
Yeah.
So, yes, writing Chair Michalowicz, the chair of the Ways and Means, is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to get in touch with me and say, you know, I'm really supporting you, social media is huge. I think the Times is going to write something else in the Globe, and I know Channel 5 in Boston. So we do have it lined up, but it always helps to have people reach out for sure.
Yeah, and it's not that intimidating a process for anyone listening. You can do it. It doesn't take much. It doesn't even have to. You're not writing War and Peace here, right? You're writing a letter saying that you support a particular bill for a particular reason, and that it becomes again part of the story.
Yeah,
and it's hard to ignore the story after you see so many different people supporting it.
Yeah, I would say that the story, Sean, to your point, that people we react to stories. We have a form letter that doesn't really do too much, but really having
you see the same form letter over and over, right? You want to see something unique.
Yeah, so how did that touch you personally is the key.
Good. Lee Davis is my guest here this morning, and we're reaching that midpoint of the show where we take our break at the top of the hour, and we'll be back with more with State Rep Lee Davis here on Morning Drive, 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Stick around. We'll be back right after this short break.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
Oh, yes! 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at Sandrini.com.
Do you have a favorite show on WTBR-FM? Did you miss the last episode? We've got good news for you. Most of our shows are now available on podcast. You can subscribe to your favorite and have the latest episode downloaded to your device automatically on Apple, Google, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or Overcast. Go to WTBRFM.com/podcasting and find out more today. WTBR-FM, for the love of radio.
Pittsfield residents, have you heard about Code Red? It's the city's emergency alert program, and it keeps you informed on the latest updates and notifications, including but not limited to weather-related emergencies, road closures, and water main breaks. So stay connected and be informed. Text Pittsfield to 99411 to enroll or visit cityofpittsfield.org to sign up.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR, Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. And we have Lee Davis, the third Berkshire representative in the state legislature this morning for the full hour. She joins me again in the second half in just a moment. We'll do that as soon as we take care of the weather forecast for you one more time here on from the National Weather Service. Here we go.
Berkshire weather.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, mostly sunny and blustery, colder with highs in the mid-20s. West wind 15 to 25 miles per hour. Gusts up to 45 miles per hour, decreasing to 35 miles per hour this afternoon. Wind chill values as low as 12 below this morning. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Snow showers likely after midnight. Snow accumulation around 10 inch. Cold with lows around 17. Temperature rising into the mid-20s after midnight.
South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of snow 60%. Saturday, snow showers likely. Additional snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches possible. Night is cool with highs in the mid-30s. South wind 5 to 10 miles per hour with gusts up to 20 miles per hour. Chance of snow 70%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
And you know, you got a cold and wintry forecast when we run out of bed music there for the weather forecast, and the weather robot just keeps going and keeps going. But yeah, we appreciate that. Definitely colder out there. It's going to be windy. And I am hearing that the Arctic freeze is going to dip back down after the weekend, and we're going to have some of the coldest weather of the year on Tuesday and Wednesday. Just fun, you know, just to what we needed. But it is the middle of January, so we kind of expect it. You know, if it's the middle of May, I'm going to complain a little bit more than right now. State Rep Lee Davis, thanks again for being here this morning.
You're right. Hey, it's great to be here. Yeah. It's really good.
And so lawmaker to watch from the Boston Globe from this year, right? 33 bills that you've got in the legislature right now. Is that a record?
I have no idea. I certainly wasn't trying to get there. So,
But quite a few. And you've got some home rule petitions. So tell us what a home rule petition is for people that don't follow this stuff that much.
So, you know, towns have the ability to actually go straight to their representative and file a piece of legislation on their behalf, which is very, very specific to their town. So I'm happy to say that, you know, out of those 33 bills, 12 of them are home rule petitions, and two have already been signed by the governor.
Oh, great.
So, I'm very proud of that.
What
so
were the ones that were
two,
signed?
So one was Dalton. Mm. So one was an act relative to the town resident requirement for the town manager to be from Dalton.
Okay.
So that was great. So that was signed into law, and that removes the requirement of the Dalton town manager to be a resident of Dalton.
Okay.
So after being appointed. So that was hugely helpful because now we have a new town manager in Dalton.
And that was something, was that a law because Dalton had asked for it to be a law previously? So then it has to be reversed? Is that how it
isn't
a
when they were
law,
looking,
right?
Yeah, when they were doing their search, they realized that they needed to have a bigger pool.
Okay.
So it was something that I was talking to them about and saying that this is an option.
But it's not a law that cities and towns have to have their town manager live in their town, but that somehow was written in at some
point.
It's
a local option, you could petition your state rep to file a bill.
So to be changed, then it has to go to the legislature and goes through you.
Exactly. Yep. So it goes through me, I write the bill, and then I send it on. So that was great. Yep. The second one that's passed is Richmond, and that was an act relative to the town of Richmond Free Public Library. Mm-hmm. So essentially, it allows any gifts or donations received by the library to be invested in a separate interest-bearing account that would benefit the library. So that's something that might be helpful to other towns if they have, a library that they really want to make sure certain donations go specifically to the library.
Yeah.
So that was nice.
A lot of libraries have to have the friends of the library or the friends of the Athenaeum in order to have that support come
through. Separate that out of the budget. So I have one that's actually engrossed in the House, which I feel that'll kind of continue to move along. But that allows the Great Barrington Fire District to supply inhabitants of anywhere in Great Barrington, including Housatonic water. And this is key because it actually is a requirement for public water systems to have a backup, an emergency backup. So it creates an emergency interconnection between the Housatonic Water Works, water system and the fire district in Great Barrington. Yep. So this will, kind of tap into Housatonic's Long Pond source and then also tap into the Green River source, which the Great Barrington Fire District taps into.
And so, certainly that's been in the news recently. Everybody's pretty much aware of, I think, what's going on in Housatonic, which was an older privately owned water system, really was not sort of doing their job or staying up to the standards, and the water was substandard in a lot of ways. So there was an emergency hookup, I think, that happened in December, right, where there is some water coming from Great Barrington going to Housatonic. And just remind people again that Housatonic is a village.
Mm-hmm.
Great Barrington is the town. Mm-hmm. The government is the same between the two, right?
Yeah, so there's a fire district. So the Housatonic Water Works is privately owned, and it serves about 800 residents, not only in Housatonic, but, a little bit in Great Barrington. I mean, a little bit in West Stockbridge and Stockbridge.
Yep. So that must have gone back. That arrangement must have gone back years.
Way back
right?
when. Yeah. So I was looking at old charters and So yeah, there's we could probably have a whole show about Housatonic Waterworks, but there's a lot of, you know, when you talk about the calls that we've made and the, you know, 3,500 touch points that we've made just last year with constituents, a lot of it is town issues that are very specific, such as the Housatonic Waterworks and talking to the DPU and talking to the EPA and and obviously talking to the town managers.
Yeah. And sometimes those issues can be resolved within the town, that they're only town issues. And sometimes it requires the help from a state legislator,
right, to
get it over the top and to make a real difference in some of the. And obviously, the big issue there is just a huge amount of money to take care of that. Right?
Absolutely. 100%.
If money was no issue, everybody would have perfect
water. It's worth probably minus $30 million because of the infrastructure, you know, an investment needed. So that's the issue, is it might be worth something. But then when you add in, you know, how much money it will take just to bring it up to what it should be, is then you're in a negative. So that's a really good example of, you know, my role as a state rep really being a mediator in many cases, and having served on the Great Barrington Select Board for 6 years, nearly 6 years, and being vice chair. You know, I have that history of kind of going into it and talking to the Department of Public Utilities with some history and balance and saying, you know, this is what we've been living through as residents. So that does help.
Yeah. Those are not easy issues for towns either when it comes to something major like that. And if you need anything from your government, it's good water. You know, it's the sort of the basic services that everybody sees. And when something like that fails, you start to say, OK, what happened here? You know, why can't we have this?
Yeah. It and then another good example is the situation with bridges. So, you know, we had the Brookside Bridge go out in Great Barrington. We have the Division Street Bridge right now. You know, with the temporary bridge span, we have the brown bridge or the red bridge or the pink bridge, whatever you want to talk, the major bridge.
There were about four different bridges at one point that were either closed or limited for a while.
We have the Cottage Street Bridge closed. Yeah. So, again, you know, being part of a select board and seeing that kind of move its way through just all the painful times, and then now being a representative and then talking to Department of Transportation and you know, MassDOT, and making sure that some of that money, that Chapter 90 money, actually goes to the rural districts. That's not all the MBTA, you know, because we don't ride the MBTA. So, you know, it's really kind of ringing the bell and saying, hey, we appreciate Boston, but we have bridges, which are basically, you know, subway stations. I mean, if a bridge goes out, it cuts a whole range of people out and of the mix. So,
I mean, a 3 minute travel could turn out to be a 20 minute travel in some cases.
Well, unfortunately, with the Brookside neighbors and, you know, Brookside, Great Barrington, that's exactly what happened, is that, you know, some have moved away. Very, very frustrating. So what was a 5 minute drive to Fairview Hospital is now life threatening drive.
And as we've seen, getting bridges fixed is a long term proposition. We've seen that here in Pittsfield. The folks in North Adams understand that. They've had a number of bridges that are failing or closed or, you know, under construction for a long time. So it is a Berkshire County and probably a statewide problem as well, or a situation. Maybe we won't call it a problem. It's definitely a situation for people.
And so
will there be some support from the state, do you think, for some of these? Because I assume some of these bridges are locally owned and not state owned, not all.
So there's a definitely, you have to make the distinction between state owned and town owned. And so one of my bills was filing specifically to kind of renew the accelerated bridge program, which was very, very successful during Deval Patrick's tenure as governor.
Made a big difference.
And so that bill has not been sent to study yet, but I'm making the case. So whether we get that particular piece of legislation, I'm really, really fighting to get more focus on, you know, rural bridges.
Again, I would think that would be a very common interest across almost all legislators. We've all got bridges in our districts, right?
Yeah, I think we have more bridges and more, you know, we've got the culverts. So to the Governor Healey's credit, I mean, she came out and she announced her transportation bond bill in Lenox, and she asked me to speak. And then I went around with her during the day. We went to Beckett and, you know, talked about culverts. And, you know, in late 2025, she signed a $1.2 billion transportation bill. And, you know, that provides critical infrastructure money for bridges and culverts. So, you know, she's paying attention.
Good.
and she's looking at the formula for roads and, you know, designating $100 million just for a new formula that benefits rural communities over Boston, because we just have more roads to maintain.
Yeah, absolutely. So, many more road miles.
Yeah. And, to be continued. Yeah. That is not something I have let go.
I would think that one will continue one way or another, because it's not like it's going to go away, right?
Yeah.
It's always there. And actually, every day and every year we wait to fix some of these, you know, crumbling infrastructure, the worse they get, and then more will be added to the list. So it's never like it's going to, you know, just stop being an issue.
Yeah, and before I came here, I was reading about the MBTA now in huge deficit, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. Mm. And so now they're saying they need money. And I'm like, every time I hear that, I'm like, okay, there goes our money. So, you know, they're kind of screaming out for their slice of the pie. We're screaming out. So that's where the nuance is, and that's where the relationships really, really matter.
Well, if we could just get a commuter rail out here from Boston, then we would care about the MBTA, right?
Yeah. And then you have the big picture items, you know, you have the, you know, West East Rail and then the BRTA, microtransit. So, you know, what I'm trying to do is, okay, maybe we don't have 20 years to wait for the rail, or 30 years, or, you know, $600 million. But what can we do in the interim? Mm-hmm. So that's where, you know, making sure the BRTA has money to really stand up the microtransit part of transportation.
Yeah.
You know, to have shuttles that take people from Great Barrington, downtown Great Barrington, Wasaic, commuter station, the Metro North, to get to Grand Central.
Yeah.
So that's an easier fix than waiting, you know, 20 years for the rail. So
that's a common need here in Pittsfield also. Yeah. For anyone who's going to take the Metro North into New York City, we're all either driving to Wasaic or, you know, Hudson to go to Amtrak or Poughkeepsie or something like that. So, and we're, you know, traveling an hour and a half, hour 45 to do that. Wouldn't it be nice if there was some sort of organized way for us to get to that, to that link.
And that's something I did as a select board member. I had brought that to Senator Hines, you know, attention, and he actually gave us an earmark for Great Barrington. I was very, very happy. Unfortunately, what happened was the Housatonic Water Works, you know, tragedy, disaster happened. So the select board opted to take that earmark and give it to Housatonic Water Works issue.
Yeah.
But I'm still, I haven't forgotten about that. And what I'd like to do is look at those kind of shuttles that will be like the last mile. Mm. So if we can't wait for, you know, transportation to Boston, New York, what can we do to get to a commuter rail? You know, what can we do to get to Hudson, to get to Amtrak?
Yeah, it's another key word that people can keep in mind, microtransit, and how important that could be for
And that was another bill.
Areas.
That, you know, there's a bill that I had for funding. There's another bill for a commission. So there's a lot of attention paid to that. So I'm feeling hopeful.
Every idea starts somewhere, and that is the process. Lee Davis is my guest here this morning. She is the state representative for the 3rd Berkshire District, all of Southern Berkshire County, and Dalton. And we're having a discussion about all the things going on with bills that she's been putting forward, quite a few as well. Housing shortages have been in the news in the last year as well. And, of course, that is another one of those issues, like bridges, not going away. In fact, there are all kinds of pressures on housing and homelessness, a shortage of affordable housing, you know, people not being able to keep up with rent payments or never being able to purchase a home, that kind of thing. What kinds of, you know, attempts have you made to sort of connect with that? I know you've met with the housing secretary, Augustus, and he seems very responsive to Berkshire County's needs as well.
You know, my background is in housing. So before I actually took this role, I was the development director and marketing director at Construct, which is an affordable housing nonprofit based in Great Barrington. And, you know, the governor came out with her Affordable Homes Act, which was, you know, momentous, with a lot of money and focus on housing policy and funding.
And it was the first time in a long time we had had an actual housing secretary also.
Absolutely.
Right?
So then she created, you know, the housing secretary. Mm-hmm. So Housing and Livable Communities, Ed Augustus, who comes from a you know, municipal background, which I love. So he actually gets the nuts and bolts of what it, you know, feels like to try to build housing locally. So I had the pleasure of meeting him as a select board member when I was testifying at the State House for a local transfer fee and various things. Now what's happened is that we were able to get him out twice to the Berkshires just within the past 2 months. One was for a Berkshire Housing Roundtable that I convened in Great Barrington, which was about 12 or so stakeholders. So we had like Darlene, you know, from Fairview Hospital, BMC. Mm-hmm. We had, you know, folks from Hillcrest. We had folks from Lee Bank. And then a lot of developers. And what that was doing was really kind of telling the stories of what it's like for, you know, developers and those in the business sector to, you know, create housing and make sure their workforces are, you know, looked after. So long story short, after that conversation and also a tour through Simon's Rock campus, which, you know, is now up for grabs, so to speak, you know, over 250 acres in downtown Great Barrington that could be housing.
Yeah. That would be a really big project, but not out of the question, right?
I mean, that's exactly. That could parcel. Provide. I mean, there's a lot of infrastructure work. But Secretary Augustus.
There's already, you know, sort of units that are there that were built for housing. I mean, that's the whole point. There were dorms. Now, I'm sure there would have to be some changes and some, you know, but you've got something to start with where a lot of places you don't.
Yeah. So for Simon's Rock, it's more conducive to staying in an educational, you know, context because you have those dorms. If you were to create workforce housing or senior housing, it would probably be a lot of it have to be demolished because it's not conducive to those kind of units.
Okay.
So that's the question is, do you have someone that's going to come in and continue the education, you know, through line, or will you come in and say, okay, well, this could, you know, we could take 200 units of workforce housing and 200 units of, you know, senior housing. Mm-hmm. So that's the conversation, but
sure.
You know, going back to Secretary Augustus, so he really, really saw the needs of the Berkshires in that trip, brought back the lieutenant governor a couple months later, where the community block grants were announced in Housatonic. And during that time, the seasonal communities designation towns came out, and it turned out that my district, the 3rd Berkshire District, received 10 more towns as a seasonal community designation. So 16 towns out of 18 towns in the 3rd Berkshires are given that designation. Mm-hmm. Whether the towns decide to accept it will be seen. But if they do, that'll unlock very, very critical funding and policy that allows them to make sure that the workforce is taken care of. So that was key. That was, again, you know, him coming in, seeing the Berkshires. And now he's very, very invested in Simon's Rock, what happens with that, and the lieutenant governor. So,
well, if you're going to have a decent economy and you're going to have people working in that economy, those people need somewhere to live, and they need to be able to afford where they're living, right? I mean, that's kind of the basic equation of all of this. If you don't have that, you have a dysfunctional society. You have only the people that can afford to live there, and they want services, and they want things to be working, and people can't work or can't live there. That just doesn't fit.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so you have the health sector, you have the hospital. So that's, you know, huge gaps right now in the workforce because they cannot find enough housing.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons why we had, you know, BHS at the table, at that housing roundtable, was particularly to talk about your point of the workforce. And, you know, I brought Lieutenant Governor Kim Driscoll to Ski Butternut. And, you know, talked about the workforce shortages there because that's very seasonal. But those folks need places to live if they're going to come in and make sure Ski Butternut remains viable and sustainable.
A good chunk of the Berkshire economy is seasonal. And
absolutely.
That, again, differs from, I'm thinking, the western suburbs of Boston. You don't have a lot of seasonal there.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I have 3 kids. And when they moved here, we came over from Ireland, they were 3, 5, and 7, and now they're in their 20s. Hmm. But my son graduated from UMass Amherst, you know, chemistry degree, moved to outside Boston for Moderna, you know, for like a year, and then came back, and is now working at Sharp,
great.
What was Berkshire Steel.
Yep.
And so he was looking for
big
housing.
News recently there, too.
Yeah, the expansion, the $30 million expansion. So that, it was interesting because going through that, seeing someone that, you know, we want here to leave Boston and make a point to come back to Lee and then have to look for housing. So, again, I feel like I had the inside track of, going around with him looking. So, you know, those are the folks we want.
Yeah.
You know, we want those people that, you know, are skilled or educated or have some, you know, ties to the Berkshires to remain here.
Yep.
That's what we really need to keep this region sustainable and viable and something that is really open to anyone that wants to move here.
Yeah. So many different pieces of the puzzle to an economy that works, right? And it just seems like there are so many opportunities to do things like Sharp is doing there, and the Berkshire Innovation Center, and the photonics optics announcement that was recently, you know, expansion of that. Those are the kinds of jobs that people, if we could attract people for those, you know, with some hope for advancement and connection to technology. I mean, those are all very forward-thinking parts of the economy. Mm. And in addition to it, you know, the seasonal and the tourism and the culture, I don't think is ever going to go away in the Berkshires. And that's one of our strengths. It's just it can't be the only thing.
Yeah. And the fact that we have General Dynamics, you know, amazing, right in Pittsfield.
Sure.
I mean, what an opportunity.
Yeah.
And the amount of people working there is crazy.
Yeah.
And going back to housing, you know, when I was the director of development for Eagle Mill, which is a very main major housing development happening in downtown Lee,
right,
on the Housatonic River, when I was working there, you know, we were meeting with General Dynamics to ask them what kind of housing they wanted for their workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a younger, more discerning workforce that, you know, expects the high end, mm-hmm, you know, amenities.
Sure.
And they were saying, you know, we're not going to be moving in these older houses. We want something that's, you know, has a gym, has da da da. So that's the key also. You want to make sure that you're creating housing that meets all the needs.
Right.
So that was an interesting conversation. So we should keep that in mind as well if we're going to, you know, really attract those out of Boston to come back to the Berkshires and say, or come to the Berkshires,
yeah,
and say, we have the quality living and we have very, very, you know, good housing that you will like,
yep,
living in.
That'll be the effort. And the Eagle Mills you can see the progress if you go down into Lee and head through there. The progress is unmistakable. It took a long time to get there, and I'm sure that's rewarding to see that work out since you were involved with that.
Yeah. Yeah. My office was across the street at the old Kentucky Fried Chicken that is now the Domino's. That was Lee Prevost.
Yes, that's right.
So I would sit, and, you know, one of my first jobs was to look at the demolition of all the townhouses right on West Center Street,
mm-hmm,
and figure out where we're going to put these, you know, we're going to demolish this, and
yeah,
all these folks need a place to go. So
that's,
that was
right,
my very, very first task.
Yeah.
You know, talk about relationship building, you know.
That would be a tough sell, probably.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So Lee Davis, in the 3 minutes or so we've got left here, I do want to bring up one bill that we care about, which is the modernization of funding for community media. That is one of those bills that has gone through three sessions, I believe at least three sessions of the legislature, and it does support the media, just like this community radio station and so many others in Berkshire County. Southern Berkshire has community television for the Southern Berkshires. Northern Berkshire has Northern Berkshire Community TV, WillyNet. There's one in Dalton as well, small organization in Dalton, and there's a municipal one in Lanesboro. So lots of people depend on the community media for their news, information, meeting coverage, all kinds of different things. I know you've signed on as a co-sponsor of that bill as well, and your background in media and film, you kind of see the importance of this as well. What do you think the chances of this bill? This bill has made it into Ways and Means as well, which is a very hopeful thing from what I understand.
Yeah, yeah. So I did sign on to it, and it's, you know, it's really providing, again, a funding stream just to keep community radio and community television active and viable, because, you know, we have the streaming services, you know, using the same infrastructure. And so all we're asking is for our fair share of money that, you know, community television and, yeah, radio are really funding it. So to have a slice of that, you know, revenue so that we can make sure that our local, you know, media is looked after.
Yeah.
And as we were talking, you know, my background is filmmaking.
Yeah.
And I went to film school, but one of my early experiences was working at Arlington, Virginia, in the community television.
Mm.
So I was able to kind of come and rent out equipment.
Yeah.
I made a film. It won this big award.
Oh, cool.
Nationwide. And then I was headhunted, and that's how I ended up in Los Angeles. But it all started in community television. It all started with being educated and having those connections and having the ability to take equipment out and create something.
Yeah.
So huge. I'm keeping my fingers crossed, and I will be glad to take the baton next year if it doesn't go any further.
Yeah, it's just the access to it that makes a big difference, right, of being able to do that. And these organizations have been doing it so we're close to 40 years, actually. We're celebrating 40 years this year of being incorporated. That's a long time. But obviously the model is changing because people's viewership habits are changing. And the communities have never had to pay any money to make this happen out of their taxpayer budgets, out of their municipal budgets, which has been a huge advantage, right? So now trying to shift the modernization, trying to change the model of where some of that funding comes from based on viewership habits. And that's really all that's about.
Yeah, yeah. But, and this is where the key is. It's locals, you know. Yeah, it's people want to know what's happening in their community.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of it. And that's why you're here this morning. We want to make sure.
I love to be here.
Yeah, and we appreciate it. So, my goodness, the hour has gone quickly. And Lee Davis, 3rd Berkshire District Representative in the state legislature, thank you so much for being here this morning.
Thank you, Sean.
It's great. We'll have you back as time permits. I know your schedule's really tight, but we'll get you back here. We'll find a way.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah. Thank you very much. All right, everybody, have a good weekend out there. Stay warm, and we'll get through the winter. It'll be spring. What is it? Groundhog Day, only 2 weeks away.
Yeah, yeah.
That's usually a turning point. That's when we know things are getting better. All right, everybody, have a good day and a good weekend, and we'll see you next week. Brian Burkle will be with you on Monday. Take care.